Welcome to Today on Broadway for Wednesday, March 6th. Had to double check the date real quick. 2024, I'm Broadway Radio's Matt Tiamanini.
And I'm Tell Me on a Sunday podcast, Grace Aki.
Grace, at the exact same time that this episode hits the regular feed, my conversation with Mary Lou Henner about all things Hallmark will be in the Patreon feed. So if you want to hear about Mary Lou's 30 plus Hallmark movies, the differences between the rom-com Hallmark movies and the mystery Hallmark movies, and some of her favorite co-stars and people she would like to work with in the future, head over to patreon.com/broadwayradio, broadwayradio.com/patreon, and sign up at the mezzanine tier and above. Grace, in my nearly 8 years of doing this show, I can't think of a time when this has happened in the past, like maybe once or twice, but I can't remember the specifics of that. But there's just not a lot of news today, like literally none. There's obviously some, but nothing major. Well, folks, we tempted fate. After Grace and I recorded, we said there wasn't a whole lot of news. And then at 7:05 p.m. Eastern time, it was announced that the current Broadway revival of Spamalot will close about 3 months earlier than originally planned. The show was scheduled to run at the St. James Theater into July, but now it will conclude its Broadway engagement on April 7th. The production is planning to launch a national tour in September of 2025. Now, as we had pretty much been hinting to the whole time, the plan has always been to bring Sunset Boulevard into the St. James at some point. After this announcement came out, I reached out to some folks, and it does not seem that this move was motivated by the intention of bringing Sunset to Broadway earlier than originally planned, which presumably will be the fall. So this seems to be more of a decision having to do with the economics of Spamalot itself. This past week, the show only grossed $589,970, and it played to a capacity of under 60%. That was the lowest that it has been on Broadway since it began its run. The $590,000 that it played to this past week was the least that it had played to during its Broadway run. What is interesting to me is that now this show will close before even Tony nominations come out, let alone Tony voting. So that certainly puts it at a disadvantage when it comes to potential nominations and even wins. Of course, that doesn't preclude it from picking up any awards, but it does certainly make it more difficult. But that means that there will only be four revivals playing on Broadway at the time of the Tony nominations in the Tonys: Cabaret, Merrily We Roll Along, The Who's Tommy, and The Wiz. Gutenberg, I think, was always a long shot to be nominated for Best Revival of a Musical. Could certainly pick up other things. I don't know that I see either Andrew or Josh being nominated in the performance categories, but it could certainly happen. But I do think it puts Spamalot behind the eight ball with those other four shows running. I also wonder if it hurts Leslie Rodriguez Kritzer's opportunities to be nominated in Best Featured Actress. I think she is probably the one most likely in that cast to be recognized. But as we know, it is much more difficult for shows that are not running to pick up nominations, and therefore for performers who are not in shows that are currently running to pick up nominations as well. So certainly a bit of a surprise, especially because there aren't a ton of comedies from this season on Broadway this spring, either in the plays or musicals. In terms of musicals, it's really just Back to the Future, The Heart of Rock and Roll, The Wiz, I guess, as well, and Spamalot that could fall into the category of comedies. When it comes to plays, there really aren't any at all. So I thought that maybe Spamalot would have been able to harness the strength of its reviews, the name recognition, and the fact that it's one of the few comedies on Broadway to carve out a niche until its original closing date in July. Of course, this was originally scheduled to be an even more limited run, about probably around, I think actually was supposed to close maybe in February, I think initially, or maybe March, and then it pushed to July, and now it is going to close in April. So our thoughts go out to everybody over at the St. James who are both a part of this company and that work for the house in other ways. But we do expect that Sunset Boulevard will be the next show to play there, unless they decide to put something else in a limited run in the St. James over the summer. I guess I hadn't really even thought about that since this happened so quickly. The only problem with that, of course, is the fact that the St. James is gigantic. So it's got 1,700 seats. So unless this is a huge like concert kind of residency, that's a tough thing to do at the St. James. So we'll have to wait and see. I guess at this point it would probably just stay vacant until Sunset comes in, but you never know. All right, now let's go back into the rest of Today on Broadway, where Grace and I thought that we had no news to talk about. What we're going to do at the top of the show here, Grace, I thought this would be a really good time. We've been talking about doing this maybe in full over on Patreon, but I think this is a good way to kind of bridge the gap from news to conversation about this spring Broadway season. So what I wanted to do was talk about the shows, the musicals, just the new musicals that are still to open on Broadway this year. Now, there are two that are currently in previews, but they aren't open. So we're going to talk about those and all of the other new musicals that are going to be joining the Great White Way this spring. There are eight new musicals still to open this season. They are, in alphabetical order, Hell's Kitchen, Limpica, Suffs, The Great Gatsby, The Heart of Rock and Roll, The Notebook, The Outsiders, and Water for Elephants. Obviously, The Notebook and Water for Elephants are currently playing, but I wanted to just kind of discuss these a little bit, Grace, see what the vibes are around these. And obviously, as you've talked about before, you are connected with some of these. So there's a little bit of inherent bias and also some things maybe that you can't talk about, and that's totally fine. But we're going to start off with The Notebook, because that one is actually set to open a week from tomorrow on Thursday, March 14th. And I've talked about the fact that I went and saw it. I did a little bit of spilling of my thoughts over on various Patreon episodes. But since I bought the ticket, I'm going to go ahead and say that this one shocked me at how much I enjoyed it. I did not think that I was going to dislike it, but I didn't think that it was going to be exactly for me. But I really, really liked it. And I know a lot of people, Grace, that think that despite all of the hubbub that we've had for Limpica over the years and even Suffs, a lot of people think that this is the front runner for best musical. And obviously we haven't seen Limpica or Suffs in their new Broadway incarnations yet, but this is one that a lot of people are very, very high on, more than I think you would generally expect for a movie to musical adaptation.
I agree. I actually sat across from my partner and watched them watch The Notebook for the first time.
Oh, the movie.
The film. Gotcha. And I was like, so interested in it because I genuinely haven't seen the show. I'm set to see it this week, so I'm curious. And I've heard everyone talk about how much they've loved it. And it was so interesting to hear all these perspectives on like what they find lovable about the film, also what they hate about the film. And kind of like looking back, there's a lot of like very strange, like charged, like assault moments in the film that I never clocked before. Like Ali and Noah having this very like heated relationship, but also they like slap each other and like it's really not okay, like that we've like romanticized it in this way, you know what I mean? So I'm curious if the show feels like that in moments. I feel I'm hopeful that in 2024 lenses we're kind of like, actually no, but I'm mainly curious about the three stages of life performed by these six set of actors and how that translates in a storytelling perspective. I've fallen in love with a lot of the score that Ingrid Michaelson has put forward, and If This Is Love video went really, really well, and they've done an excellent job at communicating that this is the great love story on Broadway right now. And I think that a lot of shows currently are trying to say that they have the love story. I feel like they are doing a great job of executing that is a huge part of the premise, but it helps that Nicholas Sparks wrote the damn book. So like as in the book, not the book of the play, yes, of the musical. So I'm really interested to see if that also translates into how people feel. I mean, look, the Creative Goods did an amazing job on the merch where they have a tissue box for sale. I feel like no one's ever done that before that expertly. So shout out to Creative Goods because they're amazing.
I will say, noting the things that you talked about with kind of like the physicality of the movie version of this relationship, that is not in here. There is nothing that I would have thought was anything approaching any type of abuse or assault or anything. Like, that's just not in this story at all, at least from the version that I saw early in previews. So another show that I feel like is starting to get a little bit of buzz is Water for Elephants. It is currently running at the Imperial Theater, and this is one that I think is kind of the most, out of the box for me because I've never seen the film. And just the idea that there is no one composer for this. The music and lyrics were done by Pigpen Theater Company. It is a show that includes a lot of circus stunts, a lot of puppetry. And this just feels like something that, like, it's hard for me to wrap my head around having not seen it. But when you're talking about spectacles on Broadway, this certainly feels like, in terms of what is coming this spring, this is going to be the biggest feast for all of the senses.
I've heard also since I saw the very first preview, I've heard a lot of changes happening in the show since, you know, Atlanta, they have been, you know, in development. And I think that this is an exciting time for the show. I've not been as familiar with Pigpen Theater Company. I know a lot of people love their work, and I think it's, I obviously can't really speak to it yet, but I am curious that it seems like people, I may or may not be in this camp, like, could love it, and they're on the other side of that spectrum. Like, I think it's actually a very divisive audience show where people are really enthralled with the, you know, the stylings and all that good stuff. But then on the other hand, it might not be someone's cup of tea. And I'm very curious to see how people may split down the middle and how those reviews shake out.
Fascinating. All right, Grace, before we get into the rest of the spring season, let's take a real quick break to talk about our sponsor for this week, Factor. As we are talking about all of the different musicals that are coming to Broadway this spring, you have so many choices in what you want to spend your money on in terms of what you are going to the theater to see. What's great about Factor is that you also have tons of choices. Every single week, they give you over 35 different meals that you can choose from. They come in so many different varieties: Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, all of these things that allow you to have as much control as possible over what it is that you are eating every week to make sure that you are getting everything you need out of your meal plans. They are quick, they are options, but they are also incredibly delicious. They're chef crafted, dietitian approved, and as Grace likes to talk about, they can be ready in just 2 minutes. I personally put them in the oven, so it takes anywhere from like 8 to 10 minutes, depending on how hot I want them, but they are delicious, and I love the fact that I always have a choice every week to shake up what it is that I'm ordering.
Matt, you're weird. Why would you spend 8 minutes doing something when you could spend two? I don't have time. I don't have time to sit. I don't have time to eat properly. And this is my way to actually get the nourishment that I need, because it's not just for regular lunch and dinner meals. No, 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 no. They have protein opportunities and they have snacks. It's tasty and it's pretty and it takes me 2 minutes. I don't have the ability to go to dinner all the time in New York City. It is so expensive to actually order out for the same cost. Cost of a dinner, you could have 10 Factor meals. I'm not kidding. I've done the math. That's why I'm starting to order more Factor meals, because not only are they tasty and we have a great discount code, but also it's saving me money. And that's what I need right now in this very busy Broadway season.
So head to factormeals.com/Broadway50 and use code Broadway50 to get 50% off. That's code Broadway50 at factormeals.com/Broadway50 to get 50% off. Another show, the next show that is going to be on the boards, it starts previews a week from Saturday, is The Outsiders. And I've been kind of lumping these three shows together because they have very definitive vibes in terms of the score, that at least from everything that's been released. It's a kind of a little bit of a folky, bluegrassy, singer-songwriter-y vibe. And they're not all the exact same. But The Outsiders features music by Jamestown Revival, and features a book by Adam Rapp and Justin Levine. And this one is just really not something that I would have thought we would be turning into a musical. The book is obviously iconic by S.E. Hinton. And then, of course, the Francis Ford Coppola film that I know, at least when I was a kid, they just kind of threw into the VCR on like substitute teacher days. So I don't really have a lot of idea as to what this looks like. Obviously, it had its out-of-town tryout, but I'm going into this one obviously knowing the story and knowing the film with all of those great stars from the 80s, but not really knowing much about how they turned this into a musical.
I'm very interested to see how the literary crowd responds to this show. It's required reading in a lot of schools. I hope that there's a lot of school turnout for this. I hope that it's apt for them specifically because you could have a really great opportunity and a hit on your hands if you've got that school crowd. Like, look what happened with To Kill a Mockingbird on Broadway, Aaron Sorkin's To Kill a Mockingbird, not Harper Lee's. It took off so well that they actually like packed out Madison Square Garden, to get schools in there. Am I crazy? Am I
Right.
making that up? Wasn't that like
No, they did
pre-COVID?
that. They did that.
But that's the thing is like you do have an opportunity with this show that has such deep literary roots with young people. And I'm really excited. The thing that I think is very challenging, and this is not their fault, it's their challenge, really, to me, is the fact that this film launched careers. Like it's one of the big reasons that we know Rob Lowe, Emilio Estevez, like they obviously were doing other things, but like this is a powerhouse mega mix of hot dudes in their like youthful prime. Like this, it's unprecedented. But yeah, so I'm curious. I think that they're doing a gorgeous job of capturing these guys that are in the cast, but I think it's a very tough comparison and it's not fair. I'm saying that it's not fair. It's not right. I hate that we do this in general, but I can't help it because it's literally like the Brat Pack, or if you adapted, it's not the same because it wasn't a book, but like if you adapted The Breakfast Club, everybody would compare you to Molly Ringwald, and they shouldn't. And it's messed up, but it is, I mean, it's a visual medium, so there's no help for that. But I am curious about all of those exciting performances.
The next two shows, I'm going to group them together because Limpica begins performances at the Long Acre on March 19th, and then Suffs begins performance at the Music Box Theater 1 week later on March 26th. These are the shows that I think when they first started getting going, these were ones that people pinned like huge expectations on. And what I think is interesting about both of them is that during their trajectories, they've had low points before coming back on the upswing as they come to Broadway. When Limpica did its first out-of-town trot, I believe, at Williamstown, rave reviews, everybody loved it. This was the thing. This was pre-COVID. Then everything shut that down. It goes out of town in 2022 out to La Jolla, and there seemed to be something missing from the reviews and from people that I know that saw it. It just wasn't clicking. And then for Suffs, everyone was super hyped about Shayna Taub's show. It was riding a little bit of the momentum of Hamilton still. People were making those connections. And then the reviews were good, but not great at the Public Theater. What I think is interesting, Grace, is that to me, I think the fact that La Jolla wasn't perfect for Olympica is actually a great sign, because it is following the trajectory of what Rachel Chavkin did with Hadestown. When it was at the New York Theater Workshop off Broadway, it was the biggest thing in New York City for obvious reasons. Then it goes out of town first to Canada, a completely different version of the show. She completely remade how it looked and how it felt, and it got lukewarm reviews. Then she took it over to the UK at the National Theatre, and it was essentially the show that we know on Broadway. And then it came to New York, and it is still running today in one of the best shows that I've ever seen. So to me, like, that's really encouraging to know that Rachel knows how to break things down and build them into the best versions of themselves. So we know the material is great. We know Woman is fantastic. We've seen all these videos that they've been putting out from their big kind of preview before rehearsal started event. So, like, we know this stuff is there, and I love the fact that we know that Rachel Chavkin is tinkering with how this stuff works. And similarly with Suffs, it's been a couple years since the Public Theater world premiere, and we already know, we talked about it in a Feel Good recommendation last week, that like they've written new songs. There are things that are being tweaked. They got a predominantly new creative team. So I'm really excited about these two shows that had huge expectations when they were first kind of getting the ball rolling, to know that they have put in the work and taken the time afforded to them to come to Broadway in their best possible shape, Grace.
That's the thing. I think Matt and I, we talk about the process really often because it's such like a bizarre ecosystem of like what comes when and if they are working on the show, because no one's gonna work on a show that they're not getting paid to work on, right? So a lot of, during the pandemic, a lot of artists had downtime, but they weren't particularly being commissioned to work on some pieces of art. You can tell that some of these were. And I think that we have a case where this was what was happening for both of these projects. And I'm also quite excited. And I'm also like, there are a lot of women's stories particularly that are being spotlighted in a way that I don't think that they have on a whole like season spring scale that we have this year. And I think that it's worth like noting that it feels really authentic and genuine from a lot of these female creators.
Yeah, that's a really good point. But I'm going to group these last three shows together because they all come with varying degrees and backgrounds of IP. But Hell's Kitchen begins performances at the Schubert Theater on March 28th. And then The Great Gatsby begins performances on March 29th, the next day at the Broadway Theater, the exact same day that The Heart of Rock and Roll begins performances at the James Earl Jones Theater. Obviously, all three of these shows are ones that come from existing intellectual property in some way or another. They've all had tryouts. They all have varying responses to what those out-of-town tryouts are. What's interesting is that Hell's Kitchen and The Great Gatsby are coming to Broadway basically immediately after their out-of-town tryouts, where The Heart of Rock and Roll has taken, what, 6 years since it originally played out in California? One thing I will note about The Heart of Rock and Roll, Grace, is that as I was watching those videos that we talked about on yesterday's show, it struck me, especially it was the video where Raymond J. Lee starts singing The Heart of Rock and Roll, the title song. And I'm like, dude, this is a show tune. Like, there are so many times when I see musicals that adapt music from popular culture when I'm like, this just doesn't work sung by musical theater performers, arranged in a musical theater way. It just doesn't fit. It feels weird. It feels inauthentic. It feels awkward. Those songs from Huey Lewis, and again, from my childhood, so I love them, but like they just feel right in a musical theater sense. And I think that has to do with the fact that they are generally optimistic songs. They are upbeat. They are story songs. They have a different vibe than a lot of what we consider rock music. But when I was watching, especially that one, Ray just opens that song in such a perfect way that I was like, I think this works. Like, I think this is going to make sense, which is not what I felt about Hell's Kitchen. And I didn't think almost any of Alicia Keys' songs fit in a musical theater storytelling perspective, but I do love that for the Heart of Rock and Roll.
It's so funny. If you listen to Only One, which is, I think it's on Picture This of Huey Lewis's albums, not that I know too much, but I think that if you listen to Only One, the clip of Corey Cott singing that, it's like one of the most musical theatery songs I've ever heard. Like, it's very bizarre to think that it was not in a show at one point. Like, it was just like a pop hit of his. But the way the storytelling through the song, like, it fits really nicely. Like, I genuinely was shocked. I think that every time we hear about jukebox musicals, we roll our eyes and they try to, a lot of times, try to shoehorn them in. I feel like there is one funny roll your eyes shoehorn of a song into a piece like this. Like, I'll be totally honest, but they had to, and you totally see why they have to when you see it. But I haven't seen Hell's Kitchen yet, and obviously, like, been working a part of it, and her songs are so gorgeous and melodic that, from what I have seen, I think that they fit the narrative of whatever happens in the show, but you've seen it. So I'm curious how it lays out, if they're sticking with the same book that they had off Broadway, if they're making changes to that to help fit some of the music. I'm curious. But yeah, so I think that they're totally different beasts. One is like a crazy, just feel good 80s love letter, and then the other is the 90s, a romp. And then the other is the 90s, and genuinely the story of, not on the nose about Alicia Keys, but on the nose about Alicia Keys in a way, about like her childhood and her struggles, and then her way into music, and but not obviously autobiographical by
Yeah,
any means, but they're totally different.
it's not her story at all. Like, so I don't want anyone to go to Hell's Kitchen and be like, oh, this is what happened to Alicia Keys. None of that happened to Alicia Keys. It's the essence of her story. To be quite honest with you, if you go to Wikipedia, like, I would actually prefer if the musical was about her actual story, but that's neither here nor there. The one that got pushed out of there in the middle is The Great Gatsby. And I think there's a lot of similarities between what you talked about with The Outsiders and this. And I think it probably leans more towards The Great Gatsby in terms of like the school groups and the literary connections and all of those things, because this is something that I taught as a high school teacher. I taught The Great Gatsby. And I think that this would be something that there are, if there are not already plans to engage schools with this show, I would be shocked, because that just makes so much sense to kind of pack out as many seats as you can with people who are currently in high school. And then also, like, everybody read it in high school. And like I said before, I said this at the paper about Paper Mill. It's not a great show. It's just not, it's never going to go down as like one of the best written musicals of all time. But by God, there are some songs that are just the way that Jason Howland kind of tailored these songs, both in terms of him writing it and then also arranging it and orchestrating it with Kim Scharnberg, to just fit two of the greatest voices in the world right now, and Eva Noblezada and Jeremy Jordan. Like, I think that is more than enough to make it a worthwhile trip to the theater, because they're truly stunning in some of those songs. So I'm looking forward to those. All right, Grace, we talked a long time about the spring season, so I'm just going to recommend two videos. The first one comes from the star-studded My Favorite Things, the Rodgers and Hammerstein 80th Anniversary Concert that we talked about on yesterday's show. It'll be available to spring from March 24th through the 31st. This is a performance from Aaron Tveit singing the song 10 Minutes Ago from Cinderella. And then the other one is a performance from the Jennifer Hudson Show that Nichelle Lewis did. She is getting ready to star on Broadway in the Broadway revival of The Wiz. She sang Home. So if you want to check out those two videos, they will be in the show notes. All right, everybody, that's all that we have for today. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Broadway Reading. You can follow me on Instagram at BWWMattGrace. Where can people find you?
You can find me at It's Grace Aki.
All right, everybody, have a wonderful hump day, and we'll be back to talk to you tomorrow.